Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston. And today, our guest is Michelle Dion Thompson. Michelle Dion Thompson is founder of Michelle Dion Thompson Coaching and Consulting Services. It's a boutique coaching firm that supports women in law and academia to build sustainable work habits for long-term professional success. Michelle works with clients to marry their purpose with their expertise and communities. Michelle is a friend who constantly motivates me to stay on my purpose. And so I'm so delighted to have Michelle here today with us because she's going to provide us insight on the topic, tapping into your purpose. Welcome, Michelle. How are you today?
I'm okay, Ramona. It's so good to be here. I'm excited about your podcast. I'm excited to be a guest on it. Thank you.
Well, I'm so delighted to have you today, and I really can't wait to hear your perspectives on this topic. As you know, the Empowerment Zone podcast is focused on the empowerment of the African American and Latino communities, and we look at all aspects of empowerment. And so part of empowerment is also individual empowerment, right? We want people to be living in their purpose. We want them to be happy. We want them to be fulfilled. We want them to be giving their purpose to the world and serving their world in a big way. So, Michelle, I'm really happy that you're here today. So let's begin by you telling our audience a little bit about you, your background, where you're from, what you're passionate about, and what you do professionally.
All righty. So I am the daughter of immigrants. My parents both came from Jamaica, and my mom passed this year, but on her mom was the descendant of a group of runaway slaves in Jamaica called Maroons. So two of the first historical narratives I ever heard in my life were that we were never slaves, which I always found peculiar. And the second one was she would, in hushed tones, tell you about that. She would all hushed tones say, in Haiti, they like burned the island down and killed all the white people. Oh, is that so? So I'll come back to those narratives in a minute, but by the time I was 12, I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a civil rights lawyer, and that's what I was doing. So I did go to law school. I worked in DC for 2 years. I worked at a clinic that, so it was in the early 90s, right? About a decade out from the AIDS epidemic. And I worked at a clinic that was providing like one-stop shop services for people who had AIDS. And my particular mission was to provide legal services to people in Anacostia, which is, I think it's still the poorest area of this city. It was predominantly Black. I mean, I know it's Chocolate City, but the poor and working class of DC lived in Anacostia. Now there's a Whole Foods. I'm not entirely sure what to make of that.
Gentrification.
Yes, exactly. So I'm not sure. I think people are being pushed up further into PG County is what I really am trying to say about that. But at the time, like they had very little access to, if you had AIDS and you're Black and that poor, you had very little access to services. So I had a fellowship that funded my work with that community. And then we organized in a union while I was working at Women Walker Clinic. And they were looking to hire staff, so I joined that union, and I worked there for 5 years. I did labor law. It was me in my early 30s, the Michelle Thompson show, versus the major labor law firms in New York City. And I successfully bargained agreements, and the president of my local was thrilled with me. It was good. I did find myself working 80 hours a week for $40,000 a year, and there's something that is very wrong about that particular formula. I wanted to become a parent, so I said, something's got to give. And at the same time, I met my partner, who was a full professor at Indiana University, Bloomington, And in that time, she received an offer to be a full professor at New York University and said to me, you know, you could get a doctorate. I'm like, I could, because I thought you like had to do the things from college, you know, like I majored in political science and you get a master's in political science. And right. And so yeah, I was like, you know, those narratives, like we were never slaves. Like what, who are these maroons and what is this about? kind of took root again. So at that point, because I wanted to become a mom and not have a heart attack, because that's kind of how things go when you're working for a labor union sometimes. I thought I'd do something easier. I decided to go and earn my doctorate. So we're in different schools at NYU. So I was in arts and sciences and I earned my doctorate in history in 2012. After 2012, I had a period of being in the desert, if you will, just kind of wandering around. Like I was adjuncting, the wages were terrible, the hours were terrible, and I knew that wasn't going to be the long term strategy. So I loved journalism. I started to see, like, do I want to try to actually do journalism? And then I realized that journalism was having the same problems that academia was having. I think one of my superpowers is that I can see the similarities across industries. Like they look like completely different industries, but the challenges that they're facing are actually very, very similar. With that said, I was like, okay, we're not doing journalism because I have a doctorate, and like hell am I going to sit here and like start from the very bottom? Like, no, I can write. I've been part of this peer counseling organization for at that point, well over a decade. And I was like, I wish I could figure out how to use my listening skills from that to actually earn myself a living. And I turned on my computer, I opened my email, and in my email was a note saying, if you would like to earn a scholarship to coach, apply here. And I went, okay. Like, oh, right. That's what I was looking at. That's what I was talking about. So I got the scholarship, I took the course, and I never looked back. So it's not that I don't teach still, but I'm much happier because I love the work that I do for my clients. And I I teach in a very different way because I have the business that you introduced. So yeah, that's me.
Well, thanks for sharing information about your background, Jamaican and then descendants of Maroons. I've never met anyone. Actually, one of my students actually at Morehouse, he said his grandmother would always talk about the Maroons, that they were descendants. That she would talk about the Maroons to him. So that this is very interesting to hear that was your introduction into history and hearing about that experience. So let's talk about purpose and your work with purpose. So what is your perspective on purpose, and you know, what would you teach our audience? Let's pretend like our audience are your clients right now. Mm-hmm. So talk to our audience about purpose and how you define it, and how can people get in tune with their purpose?
When I talk about purpose, I really mean to really zero in on why are you here on this earth? And we're all here for a reason, right? We're all here to move something along. I'm leaving that vague because what, you know, for some people that means you're going to be, you are the dopest tax attorney known to humankind. Great. Right. For some people, you know, you're going to feed the poor, you know, what, like you have your thing that you're here for. And that's what I mean by purpose. And I think, and you know, as I was talking about my biography, I think in that period where I was adjuncting and I'm like, this is not going to work. My period in the desert. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Okay. I think that was a moment where I actually was starting to say, like, what's my bigger role here on this earth? Right. It was the start of, I mean, I think, yeah, you know, I mean, there are the many times in my life where I start to go, okay, why am I here? But I think that was another time where I got to say, okay, something's got to give because I'm not doing what I need to be doing. So that's what I mean when I talk about your purpose. And I think, you know, in this advanced capitalist society, some would argue fascist, but I'm going to let that go. behave this morning. I think it's hard. It's a society that just keeps us going, 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 acquiring, doing, acquiring, doing, acquiring, doing. And it's not one to give us time to stop and pause, because I think it's very hard to hear your purpose if you can't stop and pause. And so a lot of what I do with my clients is actually, before they come to me about like, let's write the thing, or let's set up the structures and systems I need for my law firm or whatever it is, my job is actually here. So how much, I actually ask, like, how much sleep do you get every night? Do you exercise? What's your quiet time? Like, these are the kinds of things I ask people, because if you don't have that built in there, you're just going to do without actually taking a step back and go, is this what I want? Is this the do I want to be doing? Is this how I want to be in this world? And that's how I actually start to move people to actually getting clear on their purpose.
Yeah. You know, purpose is about, you know, what your gift is to the world. And a lot of people, when we start discussing purpose, they first think of professional, what their yes. professional role is. And sometimes it's connected to your professional work, but it's not always connected to money, you know?
Exactly. That's how capitalism, you know, I think of it this way. Capitalism's job is to figure out how to make money off of everything, right? So there isn't a social movement, there isn't a moment in our lives that it's not actually going to try to figure out how to make money off of it. And so the system as it's set up will have us think, well, if it's not making me billions of dollars, this is clearly not my purpose. To which I go, no, maybe you actually have a job so that you can actually do the thing that is really your purpose, right? People have really deep connected relationships with their community on many levels. Like, you know, for some people, I don't know, for some people it's like doing people's taxes at tax time. Okay, that is totally unsexy, right? Mm-hmm. People don't think, yay, let's do taxes. But if you're here to actually help people navigate this system in some way, and it is to around, you know, from January 1 till, you know, April 15th, to actually sit down with people who can't generally get tax help, that's deep. And yeah, you need another job to help you do that. Right? It doesn't have to have a dollar value attached to it. And I often think about it as, what is the thing that you would do for free if you could do it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And sometimes you do it for free, right? I think one component of my purpose is that I'm deeply artistic, and I'm here to create beauty on this earth. Right? So I'm forever knitting or crocheting something. But that's just what I do. I don't work on it. It doesn't feel like work to me, right? I sing. You know, I can't. It's, you know, singers are public enemy number one. I've been paid to do it, but I will likely make very little money over this time on my earth singing. But that's a way that I can help bring beauty to this earth.
Yes.
That's part of my purpose. You know, and purpose isn't necessarily one thing, right? You're given a number of talents. You're not just given one talent.
Correct.
You get to connect with each and every single one of those. And if you can't like feed and house yourself, you're not going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always look at purpose beyond the professional as well, looking at the life of my family. I had two great aunts who raised five generations of my family. And that was their purpose. They were there to raise children, you know, and right. They lived to be in, one lived to be in her 90s, the other one late 80s.
Wow.
And, you know, we look back over pictures, you know, here me and my sister are babies, you know, and they've got us, and then they're holding my daddy, you know, and his siblings. And then look back further, they're holding my grandmother. You know, it's just amazing to see how they fulfill their purpose. You can't in our family, we can't have conversations without talking about AI and Nate Carey. Mm-hmm. And to your point, it doesn't necessarily have to be about money, but it can be more than one thing.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. You're a singer, you crochet. I can't wait to get some of that crocheted something to have in my house that you crocheted. You know, I'm from a
noted
country, so we do that all the time, crochet. Right. And you know, your work in terms of your legal work and being a professor. So there are so many ways that you can, that it's so many people have multiple purposes.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because this semester, you know, because, you know, COVID, I'm definitely teaching remotely. And I'm actually doing a lot of asynchronous teaching. Like I'm not running classes at the time that the class is supposed to be run. And I kind of did that so, again, I could carve out time to be in my purpose, right? But I realized, I'm having four units, and people are doing presentations to the class on their units. So we just finished a whole, over three different classes, three different units. And although I'm not teaching all the time with the students, right, in the way that we think teaching has to go, the work that these students produced, I get slack-jawed every time I think about it, has been unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. And when I saw this, I was like, oh my gosh, like they showed their souls to us. Like they were in their soul. Like you could see that whatever they did was part of their soul, and they were gutsy, and it was just themselves. I feel like they put themselves on a plate, and that was a presentation. And I took a step back. It's like, in order to allow students to have that space to do that, there is a piece of where I'm teaching. It's purpose-led, soul-led teaching. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh. And it doesn't mean that you have to be hands-on with it all the time either, right? It's just that you have to be able to really deeply connect with people to bring that forward. And I was like, oh, I learned something new here.
That's it. So speaking of connecting with people, let's connect with the audience in the way that you can guide them in their purpose finding process. So what advice would you give our audience? Or do you have a few pieces of advice to provide them to help them in this process, along with getting in tune with their spirit and their soul to identify their purpose and move it forward?
I do. Funny you should ask that. There are a few tools I recommend, and I'm gonna be careful about the language, because I don't want it to like the way the container these practices takes depends on what people want to do. So number one, it's important to set aside quiet time in your day. Mm-hmm. Now, for some people, so Steve Jobs, actually, when he was alive, you know, the former founder and CEO of Apple, used to have in his calendar, stare at the ceiling. And his assistant knew that during that time they were not supposed to build in any meetings with Steve Jobs. He would literally stare at the ceiling. That's why we can have an iPod, an iPhone, right? An iPad. And every time we hear about these things, we're like, that's crazy, right? We all thought they were completely crazy at the time. I was like, an iPad? Who needs an iPad when there's a pen and paper? Well, mm-hmm. Turns out I needed an iPad. But it's during that stare at the ceiling time that he actually could give his brain time to stop. And so here's maybe what I'll do is I'll say what the tool is, and then why that tool, why the time off is so important. The brain, and by that I mean like the lizard brain, the amygdala, its job is to keep us alive, right? And, you know, long before we had cities and Wi-Fi and all of the things, you know, we would hunt. Many of us would actually hunt. And the purpose of that is to like give us enough adrenaline so that we can go and hunt and do what we need to do to survive, and then to and then we would actually recalibrate and enjoy the fruits of our hunt and our or you know, hunting and gathering, and go back to what we were doing. It's just that our amygdala still thinks that we're hunting, and when it does that, it gets really, it feels like everything is about survival. Oh my gosh, you have to eat breakfast this way. You have to do this. And like, we don't even know that's happening. Go get a cup of coffee, right? Like it yells at us. It's very loud. It's very noisy. It's like, you have to get the thing. It's going to make you happy. You know, it'll scream at you all of this. And we have to get in the habit of not listening to the amygdala, the part of the lizard brain that really tries to drive everything. We have to get them out of the front seat of the car. And when you have that quiet time, and sometimes a quiet time for some people is prayer. I actually do pray every day. I'm Catholic. I pray the rosary is such an important part of my day. Sometimes it's meditation. I do that too. Right? Sometimes it's just taking a walk outside. And you know, if you find a green space nearby, like maybe that's what it is. I'm not going to tell you what that has to be, but if you give your mind time to actually have quiet, you start to get it over time. It's not an overnight process, right? You actually start to be able to have the space to hear, is this why I'm here? Is this how I'm supposed to do why I'm here, right? Those are the two biggest questions that people have, right? So that's one really, really important tool, just quiet. It's free. My second tool is a journal. I have a gazillion journals. I have one for my writing. I have one for that quiet time. That's my work journal. Because our phones, for example, really compete for our attention, right? And our phones are competing for the lizard brain, right? The amygdala. You actually need to have a place to put your thoughts about purpose, etc., when they come, right? Because they don't necessarily come at convenient times, right? And if you have your journal nearby, you can go, whoa, I'm having that thought. You can write it down and keep track of it. And it turns out the physical act of writing down is an actually important part for us to connect with what we're trying to do. And then the third tool I would really recommend for people is a calendar, your digital calendar, your hard, I don't care how you do it. But it's important for two reasons. Like if you're like, I just don't have time to do quiet time. Well, maybe it's time to take out your calendar and actually see what's in it, right? If you have, you can actually, we can find 10 minutes. I don't mean like take off and go to the Himalayas and sit there and cross legs and meditating for a day on end. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like 5-10 minutes. We have 5 or 10 minutes. Schedule that into your time. Treat it like I'm going to the doctor's office or whatever it is that you value, right? Schedule that time. But you're also going to want to schedule time as the quiet actually offers up information about what works and what doesn't. You're actually going to want to set aside time to journal about it. And then the fourth tool, I think I'm done after this, is actually your body, the body that you've been given. When we have headaches, when our stomachs just don't feel good, when we're sluggish, when, you know, all of the things that our bodies regularly tell us are actually a sign of whether what and how we're doing it actually works. I know if I haven't gotten enough sleep, I will not write well. I know I will make... I don't make horrible business decisions, but like I know that the work I'm doing in a given moment on my business isn't going to be quite what it needs to be. I know that I can feel if I've eaten too much sugar, right? We love us some sugar in this country. Gosh, we love us some sugar. Okay, it's eating us alive, right? It's causing inflammation in our bodies. It's keeping us from being able to really appreciate the quiet that we need to do, the work that we need to do, right? So our bodies are a very key part. You know, it tells us you're too stiff. I can't think. I can't, we're too stiff. Can we move? Can we stretch? Can we do something, right? It tells us what we need to do, but we have to slow down and have enough quiet to actually be able to read what it's telling us. And maybe during that quiet time, the first thing that's going to get offered up is, I hurt. I'm not digesting something well. I'm like, I don't know. Like, you know, that maybe that first part of just setting aside a quiet practice is actually just hearing what your body has to say.
You know, these are great pieces of advice. You have four. Create some quiet time, number one, for yourself, so you can listen to what your spirit has to say. Two, to journal, write down your thoughts. Three, schedule time for you. And number four, listen to your body. I had a revelation this week in terms of listen to your body. Last week was extremely busy for me, you know, from 5:30 a.m. to the time I went to bed at night, I was busy. And so Monday when I woke up, I mean, this was all the way Saturday and Sunday too.
Right.
When I woke up, I just could not function. I could not function. And I was like, no, I got too much to do. And I was trying and I couldn't. And by the end of the day, when I did my evening walk, it was revealed to me, hey, you need to rest. Sometimes you need to rest. Rest is a part of life. Take
exactly.
some time just to chill.
Exactly.
So I decided to rest for the remainder of the day, and I woke up good on Tuesday. And I also realized, too, I ate a lot of sugar on Sunday. My mom made me some cookies and coffee, and I can't drink my coffee without sugar in it. And that came to me, hey, you had too much sugar. Sugar does not do well for your body. So it's just funny you say all of this, and I affirm what you say from
Absolutely.
My own experience this week.
Yesterday was my birthday, and I was like, I'm not going to really do anything. Because, I mean, yes, it was my birthday, but...
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And it's time to... There are times where it's like, just unplug.
Yes. And just chill.
Stop. Right. And I think, and the other thing is, like, again, you know, this is, we're doing this in the moment of a global pandemic. We're on March 180th. since everything really shut down in the United States. And this has been really profoundly stressful on human bodies, on humans, right? We are hardwired to be connected to people, right? That's how we build communities, societies, like that's how we do it. And this has been taken, we've been like knocked off of our haunches, and the fundamental ways in which we interact as human beings have been completely undermined. Yes, we're a little bit stressed out, right? For many people, that means that you've been drinking more. You've been, the sugar consumption. Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of posts about sourdough bread, right? right? People are getting their grain on, right? But it means that we're out of sorts. And to connect with our purpose in a time of global pandemonium, really, it's a whole other next level business, right? But I think we really have to do that.
That's it. Well, connect with your purpose and use these great tips from Dr. Michelle Dion Thompson, who is telling us all about how to connect with your purpose and how to live your purpose, you know, after you connect with it. And purpose is forever evolving, right? So it's never an end process. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I can't wait for you to come back and tell us about purpose part two.
Okay. Well, I will look forward to that.
And really joining us again. Well, thank you so much again. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And I hope you enjoy the remainder of your birthday week.
Thank you. I shall. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Hello, I'm here with attorney Dr. Michelle Dion Thompson, and she's about to provide us one piece of advice to help students succeed in college. Hi, Dr. Thompson, how are
you? Hello, I'm all right. Thank you for having me.
So tell us, what schools did you attend? What was your major and what degrees did you receive? And then give our students some type of advice that will help them to succeed at college and go on to do great things.
Awesome. So I went to Grinnell College. It's G-I-R-N-N-E-L-L in the middle of Iowa. It's literally halfway between Des Moines and Iowa City. I earned my JD from University of Iowa, and I actually got a master's and a doctorate from New York University. And it's interesting. At every single point of my educational journey, I was very clear about my purpose, and it doesn't mean that it was stable and it didn't change, but it was very like your purpose. So I'm a little on the driven side, right? Just a little. And for my undergrad and law school, right? For undergrad, it was very clear. My job here is to get through law school, but that actually made very clear what I needed to do to make it through those 4 years, who I needed to connect with. And I don't know if it came to me this way, but how I needed to take care of myself. That was the first time in my life that I actually integrated running. I ran cross country and track, and I actually lettered in college, right? But all of those were really, it turned out to be foundational skills, but it was all driven around, I have to go to law school. When I got to law school, I was clear when I started that I wanted to do civil rights work. I didn't know what that was going to look like. I thought I knew what it was going to look like, but like I realized that there are many ways to do that. And that kept me from the noise of, oh my gosh, I have to interview with law firms. I'm not interviewing with law firms, right? It kept me out of that. And I was young. I was in my early 20s when I went to law school. And that was actually very, very helpful. By the time I got started to earn, it was well over a decade plus later when I went to get my master's and doctorate in history. You're not going to get into a doctoral level program if you don't actually lay out what your research project is. That's just what the application is. So the process actually forces you to connect with your purpose. But it becomes a moving target. But I was very clear that my research was going to be about Jamaican Maroons and resistance. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel pressed to take anything about Chinese history or learn about this theory about blah, 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 because that's not what I was here to do. So I think it's actually, and maybe your purpose is, I want to know as much about everything as possible. That actually sets up a college agenda for you that's particular, right? Maybe it is to be the best violin player ever, right? That's going to set aside a particular college agenda, but to actually just decide what it is that you want to do with that time, with those 4 years. And that has to be driven by you. It can't be driven by your parents. It can't be driven by your grandparents. It can't be driven by what your friends are doing. What is it for you?
That's great advice. So to all you students, you have to define your purpose. Define your purpose when you get to school. What is your purpose in undergrad? What is your purpose in graduate school, professional school? Define your purpose and center your energy around that purpose. Thank you so much, Dr. Thompson. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ongully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.